It's time for a little bit of fun, a little bit of science, and to learn something that maybe we didn't know yesterday. You'll learn it today. Dr. Carl Krusinicki joins us, author of many books, including Dr. Carl's Little Book of Climate Change Science. Good morning to you, good doctor.
Dr. Luke, and good morning to you, and happy almost Easter, because it's one of those years when Easter comes early. You know the formula for working out Easter?
Gone.
So firstly, you go to the equinox, which is when the day and night are equal. The sun rises exactly in the east, sets exactly in the west. And that happened 2:06 p.m. Sydney time on Wednesday, about a week ago. And then the way you work out Easter is you go equinox, full moon, Sunday. So we had the equinox last week, and then you have anything between one day and 28 days for the full moon. In this case, it was just about four or five. And then after full moon, which happened a few nights ago, you can have anything between 1 and 7 days for the next Sunday. And that's about 3 days. And then that's why Easter is so early this year.
I always thought that Easter sort of happened close to the same date every year, and we're in a leap year this year. How accurate is your formula?
It's 100% accurate.
100%.
Except, unless the equinox happens on March 21, and then they pretend it's March 20. So they did a bit of a fudge, but basically it's equinox, then the next full moon, then the next Sunday, and you call that Easter Sunday, and then that's how we celebrate Easter.
Okay, I thought we celebrated Easter because of the death of Christ, but is there more to it than that? From a science point of view, yes.
Okay, then you're going into history, and you've got the god Eastre, and you've got all the pagan festivals, and you've got spring, and the enlightening of spring, and all of the pagans say, oh, well, you just took over our festival, and all the Christians say, no, we didn't, we were there before you, and they weren't. And so you've got a big argument about the history of it, but it is basically a fertility festival. Huh. They then turned into the Resurgence of Christ festival.
Isn't that amazing? So the period of time that we call Easter was there long before Christ.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, The oldest city on earth is Göbeltepe that we know of, and that's in Turkey, and it goes back about 10,000 years. We're learning so much about this place. Like we were making copper weapons about 10,000 years ago.
Copper weapons 10,000 years ago. When did we first start making steel weapons then?
Oh, they're about 4,000 years ago in Africa and other places.
Africa first. Africa before Rome and Greece.
I don't know the exact timing. There's still a bit of controversy about that, but certainly there's a lot of iron making in Africa. And the trick there was to realise that came from iron ore, but the trouble was there was this pesky oxygen atom. And if you burnt it with charcoal, the carbon would grab onto that oxygen atom, creating carbon dioxide and a huge amount of heat. And so you can go ahead and make your iron that way in primitive blast furnaces, which they've had going for 4,000 years. In fact, there's a very nice Veritasium episode on both TikTok and on YouTube showing how a colleague of mine assisted in making a $150,000 Japanese sword using 1,000-year-old techniques.
And can we get back to Easter?
Yes, getting back to Easter.
Getting back to Easter. So the lesson for today is, yes, in Christian society, it's a very holy holiday because it signifies the death or crucifixion of Christ. And, of course, in Christian belief, Easter is way more important than Christmas because you had Christmas in order 33 years later to get to Easter. Easter was the real reason, according to Christians, that Christ walked the earth in the first place. It was to get to Easter.
Yeah, which is a kind of a weird thing. And also, if you do the figures, it seems that Christ was born about 4 years BC. If you're going to try and tie the eclipse of the moon with the Magi and all that sort of stuff. But hey, things get a bit fuzzy over time. I'm cool with that.
Things do get fuzzy, especially when the people writing the history books, those history books have been translated a lot of times, eh?
Mm.
Dr. Carl, that's not one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you.
Mm.
I wonder how many people listening to us this morning set an alarm every day. I'm tipping most people, set an alarm. Not many people, I think, can rely on their body clock. However, I do set an alarm because if I know the alarm is set, it's on my phone. I don't have a wind-up clock anymore and I don't have a digital radio alarm. I use my phone.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I set it so that I sleep a little bit better knowing full well that the alarm will wake me in case I sleep in. But can I just say this? I never get woken by my alarm. I always automatically wake up about 3 minutes short of it. It's amazing, the body clock that you have. Am I the only one? What is it with our body clock? How does the body clock work? Does this happen to you? Do you wake up just before your alarm?
I don't have an alarm.
You're solely body clock?
No, neither. Oh. I am waking relaxed. Why should I fit into that population of people who are ripped out of the arms of Morpheus by the evil alarm clock, meaning that they will spend the day tired? No, I go to bed such that I can have a full night's sleep and wake rested. I used to do the terrible being a TV weatherman, waking up at 3:30 in the morning, and I thought that's a good lesson for me not to do it again. On the other hand, we do have a situation that about 18% of Australia, the population, do night shifts. They do rolling shifts. And unfortunately, we've got in a situation where we actually need these poor people to keep on doing it to keep the productivity up.
Well, that's my people. You're talking to my people. My audience are awake during the night when, according to evolution, we are supposed to be sleeping at night and awake during the day. It's all topsy-turvy. So what advice have you got for shift workers listening to us now, or people who set their alarms very, very, very early, earlier than they ever wanted to? What's your advice?
Well, to those 10% of the shift workers, so the shift workers are about 18% of the Australian population, and about 10-15% of them have insomnia-like symptoms, yep, sleepiness, fatigue. Okay, first thing is to realise that sleep is important. It is not wasted time. Get that mental attitude that sleep is important. Then you go for your 7 to 9 hours, and you've got to have that. Then you've got to have a sleep schedule where before you go to bed, you do this and you do that, and you do not use your bed for anything except funny business and sleep. You do not watch TV, have friends over for cups of tea, et cetera, et cetera. You've got to condition yourself. And that's part of the bedtime routine. And then part of that other bedtime routine is that you've got to have a room that's comfortably cool and dark and quiet. And not all of us are able to do that, which is a bit unfair. And, of course, you've got to avoid drugs like caffeine and nicotine and alcohol. Alcohol is really tricky because definitely a lot of alcohol will help you get to sleep faster, but the quality of sleep that you have is very bad. And then you've got a plan that you're on the night shift or whatever shift it is, then you're going to transition to days off. And what you need to do is to have maybe something like a short sleep in the morning, then go back to bed earlier than your normal bedtime, and getting sunlight in your face. It is hard to kick your body from one time clock to another. And I found that when I was doing shift work, I prayed that I'd just have a long period of shift work so I could get used to it. And also use napping as a useful tool. So if you go for, say, 15, 20 minutes, that'll boost your alertness. A longer nap, 90 minutes, can reduce your sleep debt. But don't have a nap within, say, 4 hours of going to sleep, because it might make it difficult to fall asleep.
I'll tell you one thing I've noticed after doing this for a little while now is sleep is very, very important. The dark room, you're 100% cool in a dark room. But one thing I've learned is if you don't have enough sleep, you're just not right. And sleep is something you can't bank. You can't save it up and use it. You've got to have regular, good sleep. That's what I've learned.
Yeah, it's like oxygen. You've got to have it, and love. You've got to have it right here, right now. Of course, there's all that other boring stuff. You've got to look after your food and eat well. Regular exercise like your grandmother told you. And once again, they are boringly right.
But I do something very wrong. I do watch telly in bed. But anyway, don't lecture me. Let's
doom scrolling.
No, I don't. No, please don't. Please don't. But you've got to have love, like the love that you and I have for each other. Hey, Dr. Carl.
Doctor, my lovely Dr. Luke.
Just quickly, a question completely out of left field. That
Yeah.
massive bridge collapse in Baltimore, I know you've seen the footage. Are you amazed, like me, at how easily and how quickly the whole thing just collapsed? Does that work?
Oh, no. I was actually involved in testing the steel for the Westgate Bridge that collapsed in Melbourne in the early 1970s.
Go on.
Well, the steel quality wasn't quite what it should have been, but that wasn't why it collapsed. There was something else going on. So imagine this. So just think in your head about getting a sheet of paper, like A4 paper, and you wave it around, it's really floppy, it's got no strength, no structural integrity. Now, fold it in half long ways, fold it in half again long ways, and then unfold it and then sticky tape it into a box, a hollow box. Suddenly, that floppy sheet of paper is remarkably strong, but if you overload it, it'll just crumple. Now, there's two sorts of bridges involved in this particular. That was a box girder bridge that I talked about, which was the Westgate Bridge. With regard to the Baltimore Bridge, it was a truss. You can either have a single truss where you got truss, 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 or you can have a continuous truss. And the advantage of the continuous truss, and by the way, a truss, basically a bunch of triangles, and each wall of the triangle, and there's three walls, can either be in compression or tension and or bending and or shearing. And the advantage of a continuous truss structure, look it up on Wikipedia, is that you can make a structure that is stronger and lighter, but if one element of it fails, the whole thing goes down. And that's what we saw. Think about trying to get a whole bunch of matchsticks and a little bit of blue tack, and you sort of make a little structure out of them held together with blue tack, and so the matchsticks are pushing out and the rubber band is pushing in. Remove one matchstick or remove the rubber band and the whole thing collapses. So it's like a delicately balanced house of cards. So long as the stresses go in the way that they're supposed to go, it's fine. The moment you have a stress coming out of left field, the whole thing collapsed and it was a terrible, terrible thing.
Do you think the world is now re-looking at how we make bridges?
No.
Are we going to learn lessons from this? Did we learn lessons from 1975, I wonder?
The engineers learn the lessons, and then the politicians say meaningless platitudes, more meaningless platitudes, and then they cut corners everywhere, and then there's a whole let's go for the maximum profit and ignore the long-term point of view.
But I just couldn't believe. Looking at the remains of that Baltimore bridge, it looked like a Meccano set.
It is a Meccano set, but it's a very efficient Meccano set with a minimum amount of steel for the maximum strength, but with a disadvantage that you lose one set of the bridge and the whole thing collapses, which it did in terrible slow motion.
Like a metal house of cards.
Tragic.
Tragic. Dr. Carl, I want you to have a wonderful, wonderful break. You and I will talk again at the end of next week, the week after. And I love your work.
Love everything you've ever done, everything you ever will do, Dr. Luke.